This is Deep Natter, and in this episode, Sean gives me some valuable advice for starting my own YouTube channel, which leads into a terrific discussion around the importance of identifying what motivates us to make. Plus, we gush a little over Justin Hawkins. Here we go.
Guten Tag.
How's it going?
Is that a thing? That's a thing, right?
Yeah, for Germans.
Well, all right.
As far as I know.
So, to those folks in Germany or who speak German, hello.
Hello. We have to each episode, we just have to greet a new corner of the world to find new ways to say hello.
Right. I can fire up Duolingo and that's all I can do is say hello in 72 different languages, but that's all I can say.
I'm on a 42-day streak with Duolingo.
Are you?
Yeah. I just, since I got back from Italy, I thought, let me try learn some Italian.
Respect. So
it's pretty cool. I like how they've gamified it. It's pretty fun.
Yeah.
I've never used it before, but someone just said it's really simple. You set how long you want to spend a day on it. And it's quite fun. They show you little cartoons and make little sounds. And I'm like, apparently that's all it takes to keep me motivated.
It's right.
Like a little slot machine for the arcades.
Do you feel like you're learning something?
I don't know. It's a good question, actually, because I think I didn't feel like I was. I'm like, this is too like frivolous. I don't really understand what I'm doing. Like I'm learning some words, but I still don't understand the tenses and masculine, feminine, what's going on, because they don't teach you like that. It's just repetition over and over again, and you work it out yourself as you go, I think. But then every now and again, you'll do a day's exercise. You're like, oh, I know a lot of words now. They are sticking in there. I've still got to work out how the cases and everything work, but I'm getting the words. So I'm learning something. I don't know. I'm not about to go to Italy and start talking to people, but I'm learning something, which is good.
Just would you understand what they were saying to you?
Oh gosh, no, not after after 40 days on Duolingo, no, not at all. It sounds as sexy and confusing as ever. I just smile and nod. <That's great.
laughs> Smile and nod, the universal language.
Exactly. Very bizarre. Yeah. How are you, man?
I'm good. You know, I'm trying to figure out how I'm going to market and sell all of these paintings, which is nice. It's a nice problem to have. Mm-hmm. And after some discussion with Adrian and some discussion with you, you were really helpful, by the way. Thank you again. I think I am going to launch a YouTube channel.
Cool.
I know what I want it to be. I know roughly what I want it to be. But now the mechanics of it, in terms of lens choices and camera angles and lighting and all the things that I rarely give any thought to, I can see where that could be an enormous rabbit hole to go down if you just don't make a decision and go, look, I'm going to start. I know this will probably change over time, and maybe it's meant to change over time, but I know me well enough to know that I could spend an eternity waiting to get it set up just right and not have made anything.
And I really feel like with video especially, you know, it's best, like most things, I suppose, it's best to start as simply as possible and just get a really nice, clean, classical look to the shots. And if you want to complicate it later, then you can do that. But like just do the clean well first, because that's not too hard to do.
Right.
You know, to set up a nice little Rembrandt light and a kicker. And make sure your background looks half decent without covering it with every different color neon light on the planet, because you're a YouTuber. You know? Right. I mean, like, just keep it classy.
Stay away from the, what is it, light effects or the Govee store on Amazon. Stay away.
I bought some Govee lights. They're loads of fun. Not for videos, but I've got two in lamps in different parts of the house, which I can change the color of. And I've got the two little bars behind the TV. It's they're a lot of fun.
I want something just for some visual interest, but I don't want it. I want it to look comforting. I don't want it to look like Studio 54.
So what I do, I mean, the basic way I work is I often use tungsten practicals in the background, because that's what you see in a house. Mm-hmm. So that feels like late night cozy.
So they'll go quite warm then.
Yes, because I'll use a daylight balance light for my key light.
Mm-hmm.
And I will have the white balance in camera set to daylight. So the skin tones look good, but the backlight is a different color in that it's a lot warmer because it's a tungsten light. But that color contrast, I think works quite nicely and gives it quite a warm feel. So skin tones are good, but the room feels warm behind. It's quite nice.
Yeah, I want it to be simple. I really do. I know me well enough to know that I could get so spun up over, you know, turning into Fincher, trying to.
yeah. But you know, that's a good idea, though. Have you ever been onto Shot Deck? Have I told you about Shot Deck before?
You've told me about it, and I went and looked at it when we talked about it, but I haven't been back since.
So something I sometimes use Shot Deck for, and now unfortunately you've got to subscribe to it. I think it's only $2 a month or something like that. It's not a lot. But what I often do is if I'm thinking about setups or changing setups around, I'll go look at still frames from films where people have lit interiors. And look for something simple and clean. And you can search by categories. You know, you can search by like interior, night, medium wide shot, single subject. And when you put in those filters, it'll just churn out loads of different options. And you find something and then you sit and reverse engineer the lighting, which I quite like that challenge as well, sort of working out where the lights are coming from and positioned and what modifiers they might be going through, what colors they are, and then
so they don't break down any of that kind of thing for you.
No. Yeah. There's just too much. I mean, the way they work is they are just pulling high res stills from famous films. But I think to have to track the people down who shot that stuff and get lighting diagrams for every single shot they post is, you know, unfeasible. I mean, one film might have 300 shots that they post.
Right.
It would just be too massive, yeah. But I mean, again, like it's a good exercise to teach yourself. I've just put a video up a couple of weeks ago, a week ago, reverse engineering a portrait from Kosh of Ernest Hemingway. And I think we've talked about that Guess the Lighting blog that used to be around. I think it's a really good exercise being able to look at an image or film, you know, that's moving. And work out where are the lights coming from? Why does this make sense? Why does it look good? Why do I like it? And then how do I replicate it? You know, what's happening on the front of the face? Is it flat or is it coming from the side? Is it a soft light? Is it a hard light? What color is it? Is it neutral daylight or is it got a warmth to it or is it a crazy blue? Or, you know, and just building it up one piece at a time. What's the opposite hair light doing? That looks a bit warmer. It's a harder light source because it's casting stronger shadows. Just teaching yourself how to see what light is actually in the scene, and then you can start to replicate it. I mean, the hardest part is identifying what you're looking at, I think. That's something you have to train yourself into, which if you're just starting out is hard. I mean, I know you're not. You're probably quite a long way along that. But for anyone starting out, it is a great exercise because even if you're not someone who shoots with strobes or lights with artificial lights, it'll teach you how to see the quality of light in your day to day as well. Yeah, and what it's doing. Yeah. Like just notice things. And that I think brings about a different sort of awareness as well. An appreciation of what light or shadow is doing in a space. You might be sitting in a doctor's office, you know, waiting to be seen, and you might see some interesting light coming through the window. And you'll appreciate it more, and it might give you an idea for a shot later for similar situations or scenarios. I kind of like having that sort of light awareness running around. I think it's makes you more present.
Well, and I think there's such a dizzying array of tools now, especially with LED becoming so sort of ubiquitous with lighting. There are so many inexpensive practicals that you can use. I, in fact, really wish that I had gotten the bicolor version of the aperture lights that I bought instead of just the daylight version, just for a little bit more flexibility in creating some of these effects. Because now I suppose I could gel and get kind of the same effect and just do maybe like a quarter or a half CTO to warm it up a little bit. I could do that.
And that's the great thing about those LEDs is they don't heat up too much. So gels will be fine. Yeah. Yeah, because that'd be a nice idea. It's a good way to go. So when I'm filming in my lounge, I only have my one aperture light, and then I'm allowing the practical to give me the little tungsten rim light. But if I have more space between me and the background, I might throw a rim light in the background and gel that to the same color as the practical in the shot to act like it's throwing more light.
Oh, I see. From the opposite side. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. And this is something that I want to do a video on at some stage because it was a light bulb moment for me. It's no pun intended. It's like, yeah, exactly. Well, it's like learning about motivated light. The number of films, and some films do this very well. Some cinematographers are very, very aware of this and they're very strict on themselves. And some aren't. They don't care. They just want good looking light. But I like the idea. Someone like a Roger Deakins is somebody who, if he sets up lights in a scene and shows you the geography of the room and where the actual lights are supposed to be in the scene, then when he lights from off camera, you believe where that light is coming from. So if he shows you a wide shot of a room and someone's sitting in a chair and to their left is a big window, right? And then you can see the light on the face. If he then cuts into a close-up, he's not then going to try and light that face in sort of, you know, a lot of people would then decide, okay, well, let's get in really close. We're going to make this light look beautiful. So they stick a light on the opposite side to fill the shadow. Like, he'd never do that. That's not what he's trying to do.
Right.
He would put the light on the same side as the window. To that kick of light, you believe is coming from the window, so that you don't think about it, you don't notice that. I mean, most people wouldn't anyway, but some people do. I do. I know it bugs me in some films where you've got like, where is that hair light coming from? There is no light above them. Where is that coming from?
Right.
You know, it sort of pulls me out of it. And when you think about that kind of motivated light, I mean, think about. So we had a little chat about your setup. And like, you could have, because you've got sort of a window above and to your left where you'd be sitting at your desk, wouldn't you?
Yes.
So you could be placing your key light around there to give you a nice soft sort of Rembrandt-y key light with daylight balance. And you could do this at night, and obviously it would look exactly the same. It would be great. And then in the background, you could put a lamp in the corner behind your right shoulder, for example. And then off camera, further on your right hand side, you could put a tungsten light that's hitting you on the back of the head that makes it look like there's more of a rim light coming from that practical in shot. And then you've got a daylight and tungsten, nice bit of color contrast. But that both of those lights make sense for the room.
Right.
You know, they're not coming directly from above. They're not. So it feels more. And again, this is a stylistic choice. I just like lighting that feels a little bit more naturalistic. And that to me feels like a more natural way to go. Motivate the light. Don't place a light somewhere where you as a viewer can't guess where that light's coming from if you were asked. That it makes sense for the space.
Yeah, I remember, man, I don't know where I saw it. Maybe I can try and find it and I'll put it in the show notes. But I remember an interview with Annie Leibovitz where she was talking about the same thing, where when she lights something, she tends to just accent what's already there.
Yes.
You know, where she'll just kick up a little bit. She'll just kick up a little bit where there's already light, just to shape it a little bit more and have a little bit more control over the situation. But she doesn't just go in and go, okay, how can I make this look pretty?
Yeah. I mean, it's that, again, it's that stylistic choice, but that's why I like her use of strobe.
Right.
Is most of the time it does feel like it's heightened reality for sure, but it's part of the scene. And so like it would be the same as taking someone's portrait in natural light. You're outdoors in natural light. Say it's a sort of cloudy-ish day and there's light coming from one side of the character. So many beginners are tempted to throw a flash on the opposite side if they start to add light because they think, I've got to put light where there isn't any.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of going, how about if I add light on the same side as the natural light so that I can lift the subject from the background, but all the light is still coming from the same direction. So the subject's standing out more. I can darken the background slightly and bring the subject out a little more, but all the light makes sense. It's all coming from sun behind clouds. So a nice soft modifier that's just a little bit higher power than the ambient lights, like Leibovitz says, just to give that little bit of a lift. That to me is classy. I mean, we've talked how many times about Joey L.
Yeah, sure. Oh, yeah, yeah.
At the start of his journey, he was using like full-on lighting. Like, he was lighting hard. Like, it was really hard. And
there wasn't a lot of subtlety there in the beginning.
I still love it. It's fun. You know, I like it. Yeah, I like the look. It's a bit too much for me now. But like, at the time I was like, man, this is amazing. Like, there's a lot of skill involved in that too. But you've watched his progression. The more he's gone on, the more you can't really see the light he's using. But you just know the shot looks great. And you probably, with your phone, if you were standing there taking a shot, it would look a lot flatter than what he's doing. That's because he's using a light, but it's almost invisible because he's motivating it. The power is super low. It's very, very soft. And it just serves just to lift the subject out of the scene a little bit and separate them. That to me is, that's where it gets classy. That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As you're kind of refining your portrait kit to take out on the road, where do you land on what you need out in the real world?
I almost always only use one light now. I very rarely pull out a second. I'll pull out a second if I'm in my studio space, and you know, and then again, it's still a very traditional Rembrandt or overhead light for my key, and then a rim light on the opposite side, but super low power, like literally nothing. So it's just a tiny little highlight. And honestly, you could do that with a silver reflector placed in the same spot, so you don't need that second light. I've just got a setup and I can dial it in. So it's easy. But most of the stuff out and about, absolutely. Just the one light and always trying to motivate it. Because that for me should be enough, especially if you're shooting environmental portraits. It is just to lift the subject out of the scene. It's all it's for. I'm not trying to, again, it's total stylistic choice. Someone like, I know you spoke to Joe McNally, the Speedlight King. He'll have like four or five speed lights in a scene, lighting backgrounds and whatever. And I love that look too. I really do. It's not my style, but I love that look. It's fun. It's vibrant. It pops, you know, it's great for magazines, but I'm always trying for a very kind of naturalistic look. So for me, yeah, one light is 95% of what I do nowadays. And just with those little Godox 80-200s, I find is plenty for almost every situation, which is a lovely tiny kit to take. You know, just one light stand, travel light stand, 80-200 with just a speed light clamp on the top of it. And the easiest modifier to take is just a, you know, one of those umbrella soft boxes. So you just kind of pop out the umbrella, but it's got a diffusion sheet on the front. So it shoots into the umbrella and then comes back out through the diffusion panel. So you can imagine, I just use a hair tie and just put the light stand and the little umbrella together. So I'm carrying that in one hand, and in my backpack, I've got, you know, Sony a7 III, 55mm 1.8 is what I shoot most of my portraits on, and the AD200 and a trigger. Done. I don't need more than that. That's good enough for pretty much everything.
Well, and I think that's where, as you said earlier, like the temptation is to light the crap out of something. But if you go back and look at Joey L as an example, or look at, I'll try and find a link to this one. There's a Keith Richards shoot in a hotel room that Annie Leibovitz does.
And the shot you're talking about. Yeah. On the bed.
Yeah. It's a single soft lighter and that's it. Yeah. And the rest is just ambient practicals in the room.
Practicals, yeah.
But it's so simple. And you see those final shots and you're like, these are gorgeous. I mean, these are absolutely gorgeous.
It's just balance. That's all it is. It's just balance. And if you learn how to balance rather than just throwing more light and more light and more light, if you learn how to balance, I think that's when you start to kind of find a way to hide the light and make it feel like you're part of the scene rather than like something more stylized. I mean, but like you say, look at any of the famous portrait photographers we know. Look at Irving Penn's stuff. He's not using 1,000 lights.
Right.
It's probably one light. Even if it's in his studio, it's probably one light. It couldn't be more simple, you know? And I really think like there's nothing wrong with using more lights than that. Sometimes I do. It's just I think the temptation is when you're starting out that more lights means a better picture. But more lights is often a way to like, you know, dig a deeper hole that you're gonna have to get out of.
Right.
Instead of do the simple stuff well. And then I think you're in a stronger footing.
You know, one of the unexpected kind of benefits of thinking this through and kind of thinking about all this YouTube stuff is I haven't picked up a camera in months.
Oh, yeah.
And just in kind of picking up a camera again and looking through the space and walking through the space with a camera to my eye, I find that I'm really missing just getting out. There's something that's coming back about just getting out and taking pictures for no other reason other than to look at the world through a viewfinder again.
Oh, I like that. What sort of stuff are you shooting?
You know, it's right now it's a lot of texture because I'm in this really big texture exploration phase in the paintings. So I'm doing a lot of close up work, and it's not macro per se, but I think I'm inching towards that because I really am fascinated by texture in the natural world. And we've got so much at our disposal, you know, just outside the house and in the forest behind the house. I think that kind of stuff may end up making its way into the work, into my paintings, whether that's via emulsion transfers, so it's a literal insertion, or whether it's just informing the kind of textures that I try and create in other ways. But I feel like I'm moving towards, I don't know, it's strange. It's a more naturalistic abstract, if that makes sense. It makes sense in my head. It probably doesn't make sense the way I'm saying it, but.
No, it totally does though. And I love that you're moving towards it intuitively. Like, I think that's where the interesting stuff happens, isn't it? When we're not sure why we're drawn to something, but we're going to go down that road and see where it takes us.
Yeah, it is. And one of the other fascinating things is I've been making a lot of these, and I've sent you a couple of them, these sort of drones and generative and ambient pieces of music. And I'm listening to those on a loop in my headphones while I'm out photographing. So letting myself inspire myself to then come back in the studio and see where it's very interesting. And it's I don't know where it's going to go yet. But I really am enjoying this part of the experiment of this new work. And you know, in July, I made 17 new paintings for the month of July.
Wow.
So it's turning into creative energy. It's not just theoretical, or it's not just me thinking about the doing. It's brush to panel. It's actually doing the doing, which I'm really excited about. And I think I have a lot of friends who are still seemingly stuck in thinking about the doing because either, you know, the photography market is changing so much or social is changing so much. And they're really kind of in this analytical mode of trying to reevaluate what to do next. And I'm there too. I'm no different in that respect. But I think that I'm also leaning into, on our friend Martin's example, leaning into the unpredictability of just trying to stay in motion and see what comes of that. Because as you and I both know, consistency has been my Achilles heel for years. So I think leaning into just making and seeing where it goes is a good thing. And I'm starting to kind of see, and I don't remember if we talked about this, but you know, for a long time, I've been really down on not focusing on one thing for my career, for my creative life. You know, that's what you're kind of taught, right? Is you find that thing and you focus on that thing for years and years and years, and then you stop doing that thing and you retire and you go do nothing, I guess. I don't know. But I never did that. I never went that route. And I've always kind of seen that as a negative until, you know, I kind of take a longer lens look at it and see that approach is exactly why I can do and am interested in so many other things than just a single thing. And no offense to anybody who's done a single thing all their lives. I'm envious of that. And I admire that level of dedication. And for a long time, I beat myself up because I didn't do that. But I think it's one of the reasons that it's become one of my superpowers because it's exactly what allows me to talk to anyone about anything.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
I just need to accept it. I need to accept that energy and repurpose or lean into it and then put that energy, reflect it back out into the world rather than just sitting on it, thinking that I've somehow failed because of it. If that makes sense. It might not make sense. It makes sense in my head. And that's what's kind of scary.
No, it does. But because, no, yeah. Just keep him happy. don't upset him. Right. No, it makes total sense because I think there's a positive on both sides. I mean, someone who, it was funny because obviously going to Simon Baxter's exhibition, which is still on, by the way. Anyone in the UK who's up in the Northeast should really go through to Danby and go and see Simon Baxter and Joe Cornish's exhibition. It's called a woodland sanctuary, but both just their work in woodland photography. And just talking to people who came through the other week, because I went through and gave a talk the one night, and talking to people afterwards and what their opinion was on the work on the wall and the rest of it. And so many people were like, you know, this is amazing. Like, I can't go into woods and see this stuff. I just don't see it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm like, well, this is the good side of I'm only going to focus on one thing for a long time.
Yeah.
Like Simon is an absolute, for my money, he's the best woodland photographer in the country that I've come across, because it's all he does. He's just in there multiple times a week for the past, you know, 6-7 years. That's all he's done. And of course you're going to get good at that. So that's the good side of only focusing on the one thing. But the other side, like you said, there's a joy to that. There's like a jack of all trades, you know, feel, mm-hmm. which is like, I get to dip my fingers in a lot of different expressions and try a lot of different things. And I think each of those things gets richer because it gets informed by the other things we're interested in. And they feed into each other in really interesting ways. Like I'll never be, you know, considered one of the world's great portrait photographers, but it's not really my goal, you know, because I want to do a bunch of other stuff too. I want to write, I want to make little films. I want to be a good portrait photographer, but I can't give it that kind of dedication because there's too many other things I love doing as well. But I think that the things I write and the films that I make add layers to those portraits that might not be technical, but there's something else. And that's okay as well. Mm-hmm. Like having that broad range of interests is as valid, I reckon, you know, a direction.
I think so. It's just taken me longer than some to realize it, you know, and not see that as a negative, because as you know, you and I were talking, as I look back on, you know, so school was over in 89. So for 33 years, I've not focused on one thing. I bounced around from theater to graphic design to web design to practical special effects to digital special effects to 3D to, you know, like there's just been all of this stuff mm-hmm. that I've done because it interested me and because I wanted to learn about it and get good enough.
Mm.
You know, like I think I told you, if I was an actor and I won an Oscar, I'd quit. Like, okay, next, you know, I would be Daniel Day-Lewis and go off and be a cobbler or something, you know?
Because you want a new challenge. You want to be discovering all the time.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And I've always seen that as a lack of focus or a lack of dedication, whatever it is. My mother used to call it stick-to-itiveness, which I don't know if it's a real word, but I heard it a lot growing up. And it wasn't a positive.
Isn't it funny though? Like, I don't know if you know that jack of all trades is, I mean, it's often used like, because the phrase is like, a jack of all trades is a master of none.
Yes.
But that's only half of the phrase, because the full phrase is actually, a jack of all trades is a master of none, but oftentimes better than a master of one. That's the full phrase. And you suddenly go, it used to be a compliment, you know, someone who was, I don't know, a bit of a polymath who wants to know a bit of everything and be good at a bunch of things, but not the best at one thing. Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily. I honestly think, like, if it's a thing you choose and not just, you know, rampant ADHD or something, I think if it's something you choose, why on earth is that a bad thing? I'm certainly put myself in that camp. Like, yes, I want to be good at a bunch of things, competent at a lot of different things.
Right.
I'm not obsessed with getting to the top of one pile, though. I just want to reach the end of my life well-rounded and skilled in a lot of interesting areas. Because I think, like you, I'm driven by, I always want to be learning new things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would rather be questioning than providing answers.
Yes. Which makes you a great interviewer. I mean, it all comes from the same place, doesn't it?
Yeah. I think so. Yeah. You know, but that's not, I mean, at least in this country, and I'm sure it's at least similar in the UK, but in this country, that's not what's encouraged. It's, you know, stake your claim, get good at something, you know, be the best, like whatever it is, whatever the verbiage is around it. But you're not encouraged to be scattered and go try a bunch of different things. What are you going to major in? What are you going to focus on? What are you going to be? You know, and I could never answer those things. I mean, I had ideas around them, but you know, even after college, I mean, I majored in set design and costume design, and I was a prop master at Texas Shakespeare. And then I went to Alabama, and then I went to New York. And then I was like, okay, I've scratched that itch. I'm going to come back and do something else. Mm-hmm. And I completely changed gears and did something else for 3 or 4 years, and then did something else for 3 or 4 years, and then did something else for 3 or 4 years. And it's so indicative of how I make even now in these fits and starts where I'm not consistent about anything. And you and I have had probably more conversations than you would like to admit about my lack of consistency. But I really do start to see it. I am starting to see it as a positive when I look at it through a certain lens. It's a negative when it comes to social media performance, to be sure. But it's a positive in that I can call up a bunch of different kinds of people and speak competently enough to and about what they do to have an interesting conversation and to not have them end up feeling like this guy has no idea what I'm talking about.
Or start a YouTube channel where you can talk through design, painting, photography, music. You can talk through a lot of different areas because that's your mentality and you have a lot of deep knowledge about a lot of different areas, which I think makes you the ideal host for a show like that as well, to lead us into things we might not know about because you do spend your time reading and researching and diving down, you know, very deep holes just because something takes your fancy for a month. I think there's definitely a way you can point that. You know me, I'll still say that when you release those videos, consistency is going to build an audience better, but that's a practicality.
Right.
Like you said, like the way you want to go in the making of things for yourself, I think you do have to be led by, because if you're like me, I get bored when I get good at something. And I start
Interesting. Talk about that for a minute.
I mean, I don't have a direct, let me think. Okay. So not to do with creating, but by the end of my time at church, I was getting very bored working for the church because I'd gotten pretty good at it. There were no more hills to climb. Like I was already somebody who, you know, I was usually the person that people wanted to hear speak on a Sunday of the people who spoke, you know, because I was more interesting or engaging than most. You know, I was usually one of the better musicians in the church and usually led the music. So there was nowhere to really go with that within church. I was not a great musician outside of church, but for that area, you know, all the things that I wanted to get good at 10 years before that in my teens, I got good at, and then there was nowhere to go. There was no one to be better than. There was no skill to be like, any more success I got in that was like, no one would have noticed anyway. So I just didn't care. And so I had to leave and go do it on my own terms in other ways, you know? So then leaving and having to start at the bottom was obviously awful. Like I didn't enjoy having to go back to waiting tables and trying to make it as a photographer. Those years were really, really tough, but they were exciting. Because I knew I was out of my depth and I wasn't very good and I had a lot to learn. And I'm not suggesting I'm now like any kind of great photographer, but the sort of photography I do, I'm getting bored of because I know how to do it too easily.
And I'm feeling in terms of like the sketch images that we've talked about.
No. I was thinking more in terms of portrait photography.
Oh, honestly. Really?
Like I was thinking,
really?
Like, yeah. Well, because I'm realizing that like I can take a competent classical portrait very easily, and I'm trying to work out, okay, so now what? You know, now what do I do with that? Not that I don't love that sort of photography. It's still my favorite sort of photography to do, but I gave myself a target 10 years ago about what I wanted my portraits to look like. Now they look like that every single time. And I can do it in 10 minutes, which feels great. It feels great to be good enough to be able to do that. That competency feels good, but I'm now bored of being able to do that and need a new challenge. I don't resent that talent at all. And I use it all the time with a smile on my face. I'm so glad I got there and can do that all the time. I don't look down on it at all, but I need for my own satisfaction and always to be feel like I'm learning to try something that's out of my depth now with it. And I don't, you know, I'm playing with ideas about what that might look like. And again, like you, I think we're more similar. I think I might sort of, I might play like I'm kind of, you know, very cerebral and rational and organized and consistent. But I have days where I just go down massive rabbit. I mean, this week they often mean nothing and go nowhere. I just don't tell anyone about them because I'm embarrassed. But like, like this week I've gone down a massive rabbit hole. I've sunk 10 hours probably researching and playing around with Midjourney. That AI.
Oh, the AI. Ooh, we should talk about that.
Yeah. Trying to work out, can I use this to create portrait backgrounds?
Yeah. Have you signed up? Did you get a beta invite?
Yeah, I've signed up. Yeah, I haven't. Yeah, ooh. I mean, it's
please
a very
let me know when
bag.
You do. Yeah.
It's a very mixed bag. And honestly, like the stuff I produced using it is crap compared to what other people are doing. So they're doing something better than I am. But again, that's where you start going into tutorials and the rest of it. But then I'm going, okay, can I combine photography with this in some interesting way? Again, now I'm out of my depth. I have no idea what I'm doing, and everything I produce will be hidden from the world because it will look awful, I'm sure. But it's exciting because I'm out of my depth and I'm learning new stuff, and that's cool, you know?
Well, okay, let me ask you this. Is there, and maybe this is where we are also similar, is there a singular... And I'm going to botch this, but I think you'll understand where I'm going. Is there a singular aspect or challenge within photography alone that you think would do it for you? Or does it have to now be, does photography now have to be married with some other endeavor, whether that's writing, whether that's AI, whether that's music, whether that's video, something to create or open up a new door of challenge for you?
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. I hadn't put it like that, but the minute you said that, I got excited. Like, yeah, I would like photography to be an aspect of whatever I do next rather than the only focus.
Mm-hmm.
Like just doing the zines. I've talked about the zines here that I want to start from next year where I'm writing and putting photography in publications together and marrying at least those two. Like, I think that's a challenge I'm really excited about because I've never done it. I've done them separately, but I've never worked out how to put those two together so that they feel like a whole. And that's a really exciting challenge. And I reckon that could get taken way further as well. So yeah, definitely. I love that. I do know what you're saying. Like, is there a version of that for you? You know, because you have kind of, you know, you have the painting and the design and the audio and the interviewing and the photography and the now, you know, music's coming out. Are you thinking about potentially video? Are you thinking about ways to kind of start to bring these things in together?
I am. And I hate to even think that I would be any good at it because it is, there are so, just integrating video is exponentially more complex in terms of the number of variables that you have to think about. And then integrating audio and not just audio, but now there are field record. I've been field recording out in the world, just recording
cool.
sounds. I've got, you know, not just in the natural world, but around our house. We have an old fluorescent light fixture underneath the counter that's been in this house since it was built. And when you turn it on, it's like that scene in Blade Runner where Deckard goes into Leon's apartment and he has to like flick the fluorescent fixture to get it to come on, and you hear that tink 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 tink, tink. Mm-hmm, and then the fluorescent fixture comes on. I've got 20 minutes of recordings of turning that thing on and off, listening to the different tink 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 tink. I don't know where it's going to go. I don't know where it's going to go, but it's going to go somewhere, and it's going to have reverb on it, and it's going to be slowed down, and it's going to sound really cool, but I don't know where it's going to go yet. So yes, I do think that there is, this is kind of the great passion of my life, the great joy in my life is combining things and assembling things. You know, I said a few episodes ago, I'm not an artist per se. I'm an assembler. I'm an art director. I can take things and assemble them in certain ways that yields an interesting, hopefully sometimes, result. And I think this thing with music, I mean, just since June and July, I mean, I've bought new musical software. I've bought soft synths. I bought a new a MIDI controller. I've got another thing on order. I mean, it's exciting. And it's exciting because there doesn't have to be anything tied to it I'm not attempting to monetize it. I'm not thinking about, well, where is it going to live and what's it going to mean and how are people going to click and like it? Because I don't care. You know, I had this rant this morning on our live about about all of this stuff, about likes and follows and you know, I'm grateful for people liking what I do, but from a software platform perspective, a like is such an empty thing that I don't know why you're like. Are you liking it because you like me and you just want to support? Hey, I see you. That's cool. Are you liking it because you like the piece of thing, whatever that thing is that I've shared? Because that's cool too. Mm-hmm. Are you just liking to see me do something? Because that's cool too. But without the context,
it doesn't matter. Yeah.
It doesn't matter because I don't know. And it even goes to donations with people that have supported what I'm doing financially. I appreciate it. My God, I appreciate it more than you can possibly know. But I'm also frustrated by it because I don't know why. What is it? Why did you do this?
Yeah. You want conversation with people.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's almost like I want to say, I'll take your money, but I have to have a conversation with you first because I want to know why.
You just don't have time. Just take the money.
Because I want that connection. I want that context of what is it about what I'm, how am I being of service to you?
I love that. I had the same experience that talk I gave a couple of weeks back at Simon's exhibition. Mm-hmm. You know, it's, I throw videos out there and I honestly don't read the comments much. I mean, I don't look. I just, whatever happens, happens. Because again, like, I don't know the context or, you know, it's just sweet stuff, but it's like just a sentence or something, you know, I like this or whatever. But when and also I don't know you and I can't see you, it doesn't feel real. But when I gave that talk, it's only like 50 people or something, but you know, lots hung around afterwards and chatted and just said thank you and what this is what you do, what it means to me. And you know, someone's wife was, you know, popping over the husband's shoulder going, thank you so much for making your videos, he wouldn't know what to do without them, kind of thing. And I'm like, oh, this is why I do it. Like, that one comment means more than 1,000 YouTube comments.
Yeah,
because it feels real and human and conversational. And again, like, I'm same as your donations. I'm grateful for everyone who sends an encouraging comment online. It still means something. But I think what you and I crave is that, like, that one-on-one, that human interaction around what we do. That's the stuff that jazzes you up and makes you want to keep going, isn't it?
Yes, 100%. Yes, I mean, and I've reached out to people and I've asked them, why did you do this? I mean, not, please, I understand, you know, and I appreciate, I understand that it was a gesture and I really do appreciate it, but please help me understand, was there a particular thing that I did, that I said, that I showed you, that I, whatever it is, just help me understand how I am being helpful and of service so that I can do it again.
And it motivates you. It makes you want to get up in the morning and do it again, doesn't it? That's almost more important than the money, isn't it?
Yes.
Thank you for the donation, but if you tell me, like, my favorite at getting emails every now and again to say what something I did meant to somebody, like, that will keep me going for a whole week.
Yeah.
It's like, oh gosh, this is what this thing that I put out into the world that I didn't even think it had connected with anyone, or I thought no one cared about it. This is how much it meant to one individual. It means way more than whether that video got 1,000 likes or not. Who cares? That doesn't mean much.
Yes.
Yeah. We do. And the internet, unfortunately, it's not wired for that, isn't it? Unfortunately.
No. And I don't, I mean, it could be, I think it could be.
Yeah.
But there is such an immense mountain of material to get through. It becomes a return on that time investment, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It's also just, I think it has to be human behavior about how we use it, because we're all so, like, I mean, things like TikTok are just teaching us, hey, fire up this app. It's instantly going to show you something that it thinks you like. And then you can just scroll the next one. It's only going to take seconds. And it's just like this, like, druggy binge of, like, you know, vacuous crap that we go through on these apps. We're not taught to interact at much depth with each other, especially. Which I get why. I'm not looking down at it. I'll have a flick through TikTok if I'm bored for 5 minutes somewhere. it's funny. It serves its purpose. But I think I read something a little while ago talking about how it was psychologists talking about how it was interesting coming out of the pandemic, how what seemed to have happened is that people were experiencing what they termed digital fatigue. In that the way that they consume online and interact with devices is becoming tiring to them. And you can feel a shift with everything that's happening with Instagram at the moment and everything else. You can feel companies panicking and people bailing.
Yeah.
Because it's not giving us what we want. We're working it out. You know, it's not giving, and I'm not talking about people who are trying to get, you know, Instagram famous. I don't care about that. But it's not giving us the interaction and the quality of interaction that we want. And we're all getting a little bit fed up and disillusioned with it, and we're waiting for the next thing. And hopefully there's someone out there who is working it out as we speak, you know, so that we can have a space to interact with each other better.
Yeah. We got to think of something positive. We can't leave people on that sour note.
Hey, enjoy your weeks. Woohoo!
There's got to be something.
Justin Hawkins is great.
Justin Hawkins is great.
That's interesting. Why is that working for us? Why is that different for us?
You know, I don't know.
Because it is. That to me feels different. Like it feels so upbeat. He's you know what? He for me is like, he's not brought, I mean, he does those once a week reads the comments things, and there are people sending in the normal mean, awful stuff people say on YouTube, you know, to him, which he reads out and has a giggle about and just moves on because he loves music and that's all he wants to talk about. And I don't get the feeling he's trying to get successful or this matters to him that much, other than he likes to reach out and talk about the things he loves. That maybe that's why it feels different. It doesn't have that cynical edge to it. He's not trying to be an influencer. Do you know what I mean?
I do know what you mean. I do know exactly what you mean. And it's for me, there is that, yes. And there's also this thing about, he is obviously so knowledgeable about music, musicians, the music business. Mm. And I appreciate his perspective. He's funny, often unintentionally funny. He's insightful. There is something really, man, I'm going to say it. There's something wholesome about it that I think is missing.
Yes, that's a great way to put it. It's a great way to put it. It's very simple what he's doing, and it's all positive.
Yeah.
And I don't think he's getting caught up in what the algorithm's doing. I don't even think he knows or cares.
No.
And there's something really, really lovely and sweet about that. Someone who's not trying to be a YouTuber, but is just making the work he wants to see. And he probably posts a video, walks back to the rest of his day and doesn't even think about it. You know, it's like, it's not important to him. It's just communication about something he loves. And he keeps it that simple.
Yeah. I hope that that's the case. It feels like it's the case. He feels very genuinely like the person that you're seeing is that's him. And I kind of love that. And it's endearing. And you know, if it's really serving as an inspiration, not a model directly, but you know, if I could do something in that spirit of just educating, informing, and commenting in an interesting way, not tearing. He doesn't tear people down.
No,
you know, he doesn't. He doesn't come across as cynical or hopeless or. You know, if I could do something that like that within the realm of art and design and maybe even a little bit of some of my own backstory and history, man, wouldn't that be fun?
And isn't that a great way to go into it? If you're going to start a YouTube channel, that's all you're doing. It might be a huge channel. It might be a tiny channel, but it's on your terms doing the stuff you care about. And that's the reason to do it. And I think people will feel that when they watch those videos. Oh, here's just a guy who's really knowledgeable and loves the subject matter, and he gets a kick out of this. And then the quality of interaction that comes back is different, isn't it? You know,
I hope so.
It's more meaningful. It is.
I hope so. I mean, you know, you'll get the occasional negative comment, but
oh yeah, it's YouTube for sure.
It's okay. I think you're right. I think if you and it comes back to something that we kind of circle around often, and it's what's your why. Figuring out your why before you do this. And my why is not to be an influencer or to get pictures holding a bottle of champagne on a jet or like whatever kids do now.
That's what they do, yeah.
that's how out of touch I am. I don't even really know. But yeah. It's just, here are some things that I want to talk about film titles. I want to talk about, you know, Dieter Rams and the simplicity of design. I want to talk about, you know, Reed Miles and all of these kinds of things that bounce around in my head that I go, hey, Adrian, you know what? And she goes, ugh. You know, I mean, God love her.
I think that's what your channel should be called. Ugh.
Yeah. She's got so much patience with me, but there are only so many of my, you know, millions of things that I'm fascinated and or interested in that can go in and be processed, you know, because she's just like, look, I get it. You love it. But honey, slow down.
Yeah. I think it's gonna be great. I think you've got to at least give it a shot. But I think it could be great.
Yeah, I think it'll be. And if not, it'll be fun. And that's what I want, because that's what I'm not having online right now.
Yeah, you'll learn a lot from it either way as well, which is, you know, more skills for the brain box, which is something that fires you up. You'll learn a lot about video. You'll enjoy that process, I'm sure. It'll be frustrating at days, but you'll be like, oh, this is another cool skill to have, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's all good. Can't lose.
Subscribe to Jeffrey Sidoris Everything in your favorite podcast app and support the show by leaving a review or a rating wherever you listen or by sharing the episode on social media. If you'd like to support everything I do directly, you can tap the donate button at jeffreysidoris.com. That's JeffreySadoris. And to those of you who have done just that, thank you so much. I really do appreciate it. Connect with Sean on Twitter and Instagram at Sean Tuck. That's SEANTUCK. On his website at seantucker.photography or by searching for Sean Tucker on YouTube. Connect with me on Twitter and Instagram at Jeffrey Sidoris. And you can connect with both of us by sending an email or a voice message to deepnatter@gmail.com. As always, thank you very much for being here. Thank you for listening. Thank you for your time. We appreciate it, and we hope you'll come back for the next one.